Hey everybody, welcome back to the Razzball Fantasy Basketball Podcast. We were on a little bit of a break there with the season winding down, but now we wanted to come to you today because the NBA playoffs starting today. In fact, the Warriors and Spurs game is just here in the first quarter, just to give you an idea of when we're talking about this information. And I'm here with Craig, who's at Storytelling41 on Twitter. And he'll be updating you all throughout the NBA playoffs, myself as well, at the Fantasy Dick. So, Craig, how are you doing?
Well, back from a bit of a hiatus. Been a very challenging 6 weeks or so, just recovering from back surgery a few days ago. So, yeah, giving Greg Oden a good run for his money at the moment.
Oh, man, that's no fun. And that's definitely not someone you want to emulate when it comes to the injury front, as we all know. So, Craig, really happy to have you back. Glad you're in good spirits and getting through this. And so I think an hour here talking about some NBA playoffs and then your favorite thing, we're going to talk about the NBA draft. So we're going to start off here talking about, we're going to give our first round predictions for the NBA playoffs, maybe just kind of throw out maybe title predictions just to see here in the first round. We may change them when we record again next week. We'll see how that goes. And then we're going to get into our predictions, mostly Craig's predictions for the top 10 of the NBA draft coming up this summer. Very exciting draft, very deep draft, lots to talk about. Could be any, there's a lot of players that could go number one. So that's a lot different from recent drafts where the number one pick was pretty much set in stone for quite a while, so that makes it a lot more exciting. So you're lucky to have Craig here on this podcast with me, because he watches these games, he watches the smallest games going on in Europe. He knows these players, both international and domestic, or at least our domestic here in America, and so that's gonna be really fun to talk to him about that, so stay tuned for that. But first we're gonna kick off with talking about the NBA playoffs. And if I didn't say it, this is Brent here. I don't think I even introduced myself in the beginning. Both of us are regular contributors to Razzball on the writing front, and we've also both done many of these podcasts. So scroll through Razzball if this is your first time finding us, and you could listen back to all our past podcasts as well. So let's start off here, Craig, with the first round. And since the game's on right now, and I'm watching it here as we speak, so you might hear some oohs and ahs. I did grow up in the Bay Area of California, so I've been a lifelong Warrior fan. I'm not a bandwagon jumper. I was there through all the hard times. Since 78, I've been a fan. So 3 years after their first title is when I was born. And so I struggled through all those years, and I still need someone to pinch me to believe that players like Durant want to come to the Warriors, and that we're favorites for anything, is still amazing to me. But, Craig, what do you think about, the Spurs Warriors playoff series? Obviously Steph Curry not playing, Kawhi Leonard ruled out for game one, but not the whole series. I think Steph Curry has been ruled out for the whole series. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, first off, I just want to say, you've been a fan since 78. That makes you about 102 years old, doesn't it?
1978. Okay, much older than I'd like to be. Yeah.
Well, I think this is, again, a series with quite a bit of intrigue for me, actually. I think that a lot of people that I speak to are actually saying that this could be the year that the Warriors don't actually win it. And I think that there's quite a bit of intrigue to this series. They are banged up, the Warriors. I mean, you've still got to favour them, and I've got them in five in this. But the fact that Kawhi's still not playing, it's just a mystery, isn't it? I mean, he's got to have gone now, hasn't he? If Kawhi was there, I would think that this was actually probably the worst-case scenario for the Warriors to play in the first round would be a Greg Popovich Spurs side. I'm still not ruling the Spurs out entirely, but I've got the Warriors by five. I just think that even without Steph Curry, they've been there, they've done that. I mean, the Spurs have as well, but they're relying on a lot of players now that they haven't necessarily relied on when they've won the championship before. Kyle Anderson, Danny Green, good players, good defensive players, and they're obviously going to be really key if they're going to be able to do anything in this series, as well as LaMarcus Aldridge being able to find that offense. I'm not ruling the Spurs out, but I got the Warriors by 5. How about you, Brent?
It was the same. If you guys follow me on Twitter, I threw out some predictions for quite a few of the games yesterday, and I did have the Warriors in 5. I don't think it's going to be a sweep. If Kawhi Leonard was to come back for this first round series with Steph Curry out for the series, it would be the second luckiest thing that had ever happened to the Spurs franchise. The first being getting the number one pick after a season where David Robinson was injured the whole season. So they had kind of a throwaway season that turned into Tim Duncan. And then they were able to come back. Yeah, they were able to come back.
Tanking before tanking was a thing.
Exactly. And it wasn't necessarily intentional. I mean, David Robinson was one of the best players in the league.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, they definitely were not pushing themselves as hard as they could have, I don't think, that season. And it did turn into Tim Duncan, and it completely paid off. And we could see the same thing happen with the Suns, with the Grizzlies, with the Mavericks this year, which we'll get into a little bit later. They weren't even a favorite for the number one pick, though, that season. They got lucky and got the number one pick, even though their odds were not the best in the lottery. And then pairing, Duncan and David Robinson together, they turned into two championships and the Spurs franchise as we know it. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Kawhi. So I always want to get him mixed up with Kyrie Irving. Kawhi. So Kawhi Leonard, should he have had surgery? Probably. I've heard from people who've had this similar injury that he has, and they said really surgery is your best option. And I know surgery probably would have ruled him out for the whole season for sure. And I'm sure he was hopeful to be able to make it back and play through the pain. But it's obviously something where, despite what everyone says, I think if he could play, he would be playing. I got to think a guy who plays as hard as he does and wants to win as bad as he does would definitely want to get back out there. I think I hope it doesn't turn into an Isaiah Thomas situation where he puts off the surgery, comes back, all through the offseason, comes back next year, and he just still can't play through it, and then eventually has to go to the surgery. That's a scary thought, and it's definitely a possibility, so I hope that that's not what happens. But I doubt we see him in this series. It doesn't seem hopeful. And if the Warriors, if the best case scenario for the Warriors is to win the first couple of games, in case Leonard does come back, they at least got a couple games under their belt, because without Curry and with Leonard in there, the Spurs could be mighty dangerous. They were dangerous without Leonard. So, to even make the playoffs in the West, you have to be a good team. So they're definitely right there. But yeah, I agree with you, Craig, on that one. Warriors in 5. I don't think the Warriors are going to sweep their way through the playoffs this year. They just look too shaky. I do think that we're not going to see the same Warriors that we saw in the regular season, though. I think that they will get up more for these playoff games. What do you think, Craig? Do you think what we saw in the regular season was just fatigue and wanting to get out of the regular season into the playoffs and just, not really focusing as hard as they could? Or do you think the Warriors are really kind of discombobulated right now?
I think sometimes we underrate the ability to have been there and done that. I think the Warriors are fine. I think they'll play themselves into the playoffs quite nicely. I don't necessarily expect, like you said, the sweep and fast start. Any foregone conclusion from them, they're going to win it. But I think they'll play themselves into health. And they've got to be contenders, if not the favourites at this point. So I've got no concerns in that regards. I just don't think, without Kawhi, I just don't think, even with Popovich, I don't think the Spurs have got enough. But I think the Warriors will be fine.
Yeah, and the best case scenario for the Warriors, obviously, is a sweep or a win in 5 and give Curry that, and then have the other playoff series go longer, just to give Curry that extra time to rest so that when he does come back, he is 100% and we don't get 80% Steph Curry like we did the season that they didn't win the title. In the last 3 years, where he was hurt through those early series with a similar knee injury. and wasn't able to get all the rest he needed to be 100%, and just wasn't the same Curry going into the finals, and you know, the big reason why they weren't able to pull it out that year, other than, you know, a couple other major things. But we won't get into that since we are focused on the present. So let's stay in the West then, and go to the next series here. That would be whoever wins this next series would play the winner of the Spurs and Warriors series. So the Warriors are hoping that this series goes a long way, and I think it will. But let's get Craig. Craig, why do you think the Blazers and the Pelicans? What's going to happen? The Blazers are one of the hottest teams in basketball to end the season, and the Pelicans looked really good without Cousins, which was amazing. What do you think is going to happen?
I've got Blazers in seven for this one. Quite interestingly, I was looking through the other day. I was sort of out the loop for a few weeks, so I was looking back through stats and things. I noticed I was looking at Nikola Mirotic and the impact that he's had for the Pelicans, and was talking to some people and sort of explaining, you know, the importance of the NBA and the impact that it has on the, you know, the players around you and what they're able to do on the offensive end. Now, when I was looking through the stats, I saw that Mirotic's three-point percentage as a Pelican was actually considerably lower than that of DeMarcus Cousins. He'd only shot something like, had a 33% success rate compared to, I think it was 41% when he was at the Bulls earlier on in the season, from down to a 35% success rate, which surprised me. But I think, you know, the important thing to kind of take from that is not necessarily the success rate, but the fact of having a legitimate threat out there to the opposing teams really have to worry a lot more about. And it did. It brought the best out of Drew. We saw AD's just been on an explosion. But it's the playoffs, man. This is where it gets serious. This is where it gets tough. AD's obviously the key man in the playoffs. But it's a lot of intense minutes out there. And I just think the Blazers are going to come through. In game seven, Blazers have been hot. Terry Stotts gonna do his thing, you know, highly respected, highly underrated manager. And I kind of like the way that the Blazers have come along this season. You know, people weren't really, the last couple of years, they've gone into the season a little bit under the radar. People are a bit down on them since LA had left, and Nick Batum, and who's the guy that was always injured, Wes Matthews. But they still do work, you know. They still do work, and you know, Lillard is a stud. CJ McCollum does his thing. I mean, this is one of those playoff games, well, a series where the health is going to be everything. Going to stay on the court, is AD going to stay on the court? But I've got Blazers in seven. How about you?
I don't think it'll go to seven. I actually predicted yesterday. I think that the Blazers are going to win this one in five. And then I think Brow's gonna get the Pelicans one win, but I think the Blazers are just an overmatched. The Pelicans are gonna be overmatched in this one. The Blazers just have too much talent. I do agree with you. Injuries are gonna play a big part in it. Lillard was kind of banged up there towards the end of the season, so if he's healthy, I think the Blazers just have too much firepower for the Pelicans. But I give the Pelicans a lot of credit. I give AD a lot of credit for what they did. It's hard to lose a superstar like that and keep playing as well as they did and play even better.
I was about to say, you can make an argument that they were actually a better team for it. I mean, obviously, they lost a hell of a player. I remember us talking mid-season. They were screaming for a three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Cousins injury forced the issue, or if you like, on Mirotic, and it's worked out, which, you know, I got to hold my hand up. I had my serious doubts as to whether it would and whether it'd be enough, especially with how thin the squad was. But it made them a better team. They were crying for a legitimate three-point shooter. And yes, you know, he hasn't hit 40% for them, but the fact that they just have the threat there brings out, you know, such a better game out of Drew. And even more spacing for AD in the paint, you know? So... you got to give the Pelicans credit there.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think the wild card in this series is going to be the Pelicans' sort of fourth and fifth options. You know, the Etuan Moores, the Ian Clarks, you know, are these guys, if these guys have good games, They could be really tough to beat because you know, say Davis is gonna have, you know, Davis is gonna have those numbers. Mirotić is also pretty really streaky, so I think Drew and AD are pretty safe bets to play their normal game at a high level. Now, like if Mirotić is hitting those threes and Etuan Moore's hitting those threes and they're able to space the floor, they're gonna be tough. But I just think at the end of the day, the Blazers just have too many weapons for the Pelicans. They're gonna have to work too hard on defense. And I think the Pelicans would be lucky to steal one game in this one, but
on to the next one.
I just do want to point out one thing from the Warriors-Spurs series, just because I happen to be watching that game as we speak. The Warriors started no point guard. They started Andre Iguodala and they started JaVale McGee. They have Quinn Cook coming off the bench in this one. So an interesting lineup to start with, but McGee was a beast in the center. There was one series where he blocked Aldridge's shot, and it led to a Kevin Durant three on the other end, and the Warriors have jumped out to a good lead. So it's not a lineup I saw in the regular season. So it is a little scary when you're toying with the lineups in the playoffs. But you know, these guys are veterans and they've been there before for the most part. Maybe that's why he went with that lineup as opposed to Quinn Cook, who was a two-way player up until about 2 weeks ago. Although he did just hit a nice shot. So you know, did you know about Quinn Cook when you know, coming out of school? Because I'd never heard of him before until this season. Is he just playing way over his head, or is he just kind of an underlooked guy? Sorry to change the subject real quick.
I don't think it's fine. I think too many people underrate how many good basketball players they are. But there are a lot of players that look much better in certain systems than others. It's almost like the ideal landing spot. And there are certain people made for certain roles within a team. And I think that's a case here.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. I was just throwing that out there really quick because I don't get too many chances to talk to Craig about guys like Cook, and he's certainly the expert on young players coming in. So the next grouping here. So we both agree it's going to be Warriors Blazers going into the second round. I just think that the Blazers are going to get done quickly. I hope Craig is right, and that series does go to seven, because that will give Curry that extra rest that we were talking about. So the next one, we'll save the number one seed for last, and we'll jump over to a really interesting series in my mind, with two teams sort of going opposite directions during the regular season, but both, you know, loaded with talent, the Thunder and the Jazz. What do you think, Craig? Are the Jazz going to keep playing a sweet tune here in the playoffs?
Well, I think this is, I agree with you, this is the matchup in my interest the most in the West. I've got the Jazz by seven. I just think I like the momentum. I think that now that they've been hitting shots from beyond the arc, Jay Crowder has just been an ideal fit there. You know, they're relatively healthy. Joe Ingles seems to have got his second wind after looking like he was down and out and exhausted and had one too many burgers sort of halfway through the season. I just think they're equipped to get through this first round. You know, the Thunder's depth worries me a little bit. The reliance, maybe over-reliance on two players probably affects them in this kind of situation too much for me. And I think the Jazz have also got significant defense amongst their guards to be able to handle Westbrook about as well as you can in a playoff situation. So, you know, and I'm not just talking about in the starters, but you get, you know, a guy like Dante Exum, for example, you know, terrific off-the-ball defender. I think the Jazz are matched up well for this, but I think it's going to be close, and I've got the Jazz by seven.
I'm right with you. I have the Jazz in six. I do think the Jazz are the scariest team in the West right now, just because of the way they were playing, how deep they are. I mean, I think that's a big reason why Joe Ingles was able to get his head right, get his win back, was because of just how well, like, Royce O'Neal and then Crowder coming over. You know, he was able to, he didn't have as big a burden as he had when the season started, with Donovan Mitchell stepping up. You know, it led Ingles to not – Ingles was coming into this year, he was going to have to be one of their primary scorers. And, you know, with the emergence of Mitchell and these other guys, it took a lot of pressure off him, and he is just in a zone right now. And then, you know, knowing that you have Gobert back there and Favors, you know, down there in the front court ready to battle at the rim, that's going to give the guards so much more confidence to guard guys like Westbrook and George and Anthony and get out on the perimeter on them and let Westbrook take those drives to the basket, because Gobert is going to be back there changing shots. So we're not going to see Westbrook be able to pump fake a three and drive to the hoop, or, you know, they're not going to have to just give him the three because they're scared of the drive, because they know who they got back there. And that is just going to just mess with the Thunder. I think the wild card in that series is Carmelo Anthony. Is he going to be able to play team basketball like he showed at times during the season, where, you know, he really just turned into what Razzballers call a Thragnoff, which is just a three-point specialist at times. Even his rebounds were down. But if he can get into the system, let Westbrook and George, you know, kind of lead it, and then just be out there and take those single teams and hit his shots, you know, the Thunder are going to have a chance. And, you know, Westbrook and George are going to have to dominate. They don't really have any other options. They're not as deep as the Jazz. But what the Jazz have are just really good defenders. I mean, if Exum was a little injured here at the end of the year, if he's healthy, and Royce O'Neal and Crowder, like, these wing defenders are just going to cause a lot of problems for George and Westbrook. And knowing Gobert is back there, like I said, is going to give them a lot of confidence to play really aggressive basketball, which is going to lead to a lot of fast breaks and a lot of points, which they've shown they can really finish on. I mean, I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see the Jazz sweep or win in five in this one. I'm giving the Thunder and their talent and Westbrook and George, because I respect them so much, credit and say it's going to be six. But I would not be in the least bit surprised to see a sweep or win in five in this one.
I think the important matchup here for me is, we can talk about Westbrook, we can talk about Donovan Mitchell, but I think a lot of this is going to come down to the benches. Which bench is going to step up? And I've got more confidence in the bench of the Jazz than I do the Thunder. I also think another key matchup here, probably the key matchup for me, is Gobert versus Adams. Whichever one of those guys can protect the paint the best, I think is going to triumph. And that, for me, is why I've got the Jazz slightly above them.
I agree. I think Gobert should be in the running for Defensive Player of the Year. He's been that good. But don't take anything away from the season that Steven Adams has had. And I think he could still get even better next year. I love him as a fantasy pick next season. I think, I'm so impressed with that guy. But I just think he just doesn't have any help. He doesn't have Cantor there anymore. He doesn't have he's the only guy down there. And I think, yeah, the Jazz are just going to be too much for him in a long series like this. So the final series here in the West, and then we'll move on to the East. So the final series here in the West, the Rockets and the Wolves. Do the Wolves have any shot here, Craig? Are they going to be able to get a game?
Yeah, I think they've got every shot. I think that this was the matchup that no one really wanted at the top. The Wolves are dangerous. There's no doubt about it. I think that, you know, forget the regular season. In terms of a playoff environment, they've got the tools. They've got the tools and, you know, somewhat depth in order to be able to give anybody a game, whether that's Houston, Pelicans, Blazers, whoever they matched up against. It was a team that no one wanted to get. Jimmy Butler coming back is absolutely huge. You know, you got a two-way player of the caliber of Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, and you can't write them off at all. You know, you see some of the greatest two-way players in sort of the recent game, of how they've been able to carry some teams in the playoffs to surprise wins, or, you know, run the best to seven games. You know, think what guys like Paul George were able to do in Indiana, even Jimmy Butler at Chicago. You know, these are guys that have been able to carry playoff teams into some really great matchups against, you know, some of the very best. So I'm not ruling out the Wolves here, and I think it's going to be more difficult than what you know, most people think. And I've got the Rockets by 7.
Yep, and I may have been a little misleading there with my leading. If you read my tweet yesterday, I think the Wolves could upset the Rockets. I picked the Rockets to win in 6, but I think there is some potential there for an upset, because it all depends on, you know, how healthy Butler is, and he looked pretty dang healthy in that game against the Nuggets. And just because I think Butler's defense on Harden, one of the few people in the league who can disrupt Harden, and then having a guy like Karl Anthony Towns, who with his size and wingspan, but also his quickness to guard on those pick and rolls, to be able to get back and help on the weak side against, you know, Chris Paul driving to the hoop, you know, it's dangerous. The problem is they're not very deep. Thibodeau didn't play a very deep bench this year. Can Teague hang with Paul? That's a big question. Capella, if he's playing really aggressive, and the Wolves are having to keep a guy on him consistently, that's gonna hurt them quite a bit. So I do think the Rockets, you know, if they're hitting their threes, if those threes are falling, you know, they're gonna be extremely tough to beat, and that's up against anybody, a full strength Warriors even. But if the Wolves can disrupt them on the defensive end and get them out of their flow, I do think the Wolves could generate enough offense to beat them. If it comes down to a shootout, though, I just think the Rockets just have too much, and that's why I said in 6 and not even in 7. But I wanted to make sure that I threw it out there that I do think the Wolves present a matchup problem, not just for the Rockets, but for anybody, and that there is potential for an upset here.
I think Fibs is going to slow it down. You know, like you hit the nail on the head when you said you got to break the Rockets' rhythm. If you break the Rockets' rhythm, you give yourself a chance. And I think that there's enough tools there with the Timberwolves to be able to do that, and not just do it, but do it well. You know, Fibs is a smart coach. If there's one thing he can do really well, it is disrupt the opposition when he needs to. So it's a really intriguing matchup, but you know, I've got the Rockets in 7, but if Timberwolves had home advantage, you know, I think it's more of a problem than what some people give it credit for the Rockets.
Yeah, and what a crazy season this has been, because we started off the year thinking, oh, it's another boring year with the Warriors just winning it all, and now, because, you know, partly because of injuries, but a lot has to do with some front offices making some really good moves in the West to stay competitive. Some players really stepping up their game, like, and surprise guys like Donovan Mitchell and things like that. This Western Conference playoffs is completely up for grabs. I mean, I honestly would not be surprised to see, like, you know, a Jazz Blazers conference finals. I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if something like that was to happen. It's just, I think it's a lot closer than people think. You know, more than likely it's going to be Rockets Warriors in the finals, and, you know, that's probably what's going to happen. I'd say there's probably like an 80% chance of that or something. But I think there's a good 20% chance that there's a couple teams in the finals that we did not expect, or at least one team that we would not have expected earlier in the year. And that's making these playoffs really exciting for me. Okay, so we'll move on to the East. Let's start with the 8. The number, we'll go reverse order this time in the East, and start with the 1 versus the 8, because I think this is the most boring series in the East. And in my opinion, I think this is the best chance at a sweep in any of the first round games, and that's the Raptors Wizards. Are you with me on this one, Craig, or you think the Wizards are gonna be able to steal one?
I think the Wizards can steal one at home. I've got the Raptors in 5. I think the Raptors have got the best bench in the NBA, in my opinion. I think the inexperience of some of the Raptors is going to allow for the Wizards to get a game, but the depth is too much for a lot of teams, and I've got the Raptors in five.
Yeah, I, like I said, I think this is the best shot at a sweep, so I'm going to stick with my tweet yesterday where I said the Raptors are gonna sweep the Wizards. I think the Wizards are just lost out there. I, they have talent, but it's showing. You know, they're talented. They have too much talent in the same spot. they need more diverse talent on their team. They need one of those unicorns or whatever that these other, you know, the Karl Anthony Towns type, I think, to keep the ball out of all these wing player hands and let them run around the floor more, or at least an offensive style that's more in line with like the Warriors. The Warriors have a lot of wing guys or a lot of guys who can spread the floor, but they play such team basketball that the ball moves around and they create that space without having a threat in the middle. The Wizards don't really have that threat in the middle, but they don't move the ball around to spread the floor either. So not having either one of those things, there's just no way they're going to be able to hang with the Raptors who changed their offense to fit the new NBA team style of play. And big kudos to Kyle Lowry for taking a step back, decreasing his offensive role, or changing his offensive role, I should say, from more of a facilitator, from a scorer, from a guy they relied on to score. And he still made the All-Star team, which was super happy for him that he was able to take that step back like that and still be recognized as an All-Star, because what he's done in helping that team grow and become deep has given them a legit shot at going to the finals this year. And it's almost 100% off because of Lowry and his unselfishness.
It's that Giannis is going to be taking on.
Oh, for
sure. I think the fact that we're relying on so many rookies for heavy minutes, you know, I'm a massive fan of Jason Tatum, but I think that, you know, this is the time where if Boston are going to win this playoff series, you know, this is the time for Tatum to really become a man, and maybe it's, you know, one season too early for Tatum to really take on that role. But I think I've got the Bucks here in six. I think that, you know, forget the seedings here. I think it's a matchup problem for Boston, and I think Brad Stevens knows it. I think it's a real shame the way the kind of season's gone for the Celtics, because it was looking like it was a wonderful off season. Even with the Hayward injury, they still got their momentum going. You know, some really, really impressive wins, and you know, an impressive win total under the circumstances. Bearing in mind, I think they might have played six or seven rookies throughout the season, and a lot of them played throughout. So. But I've got the Bucks in six. I just think that there's going to be a bit too much there over a playoff series, too much inexperience with Boston. What about you, Brent?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you that it's a shame that Kyrie went down. I think this could have been one of the best, most exciting series in the first round if Kyrie was playing.
I still think it could be. There's still a lot of talent.
I agree. I think Kyrie, though, without Kyrie in there and the spark that he brings and the offense that he brings, I think the Bucks. I think Giannis, like you were talking about, players who can single-handedly affect a series on the West side. I think Giannis is that guy in the East.
I agree.
You know,
if there is a guy that is.
Craig, your mic cut out there. Can you hear me? So I don't know. We might have lost Craig there for a second. We'll let him jump back in with that. But the Giannis, you know, I see him, and even LeBron and Durant have come forward, and I'm gonna give him six games because I respect Brad Stevens and what he's gonna be able to do, and I think defense is gonna be able to stop him. Yeah. Okay.
Don't underestimate Brad Stevens' ability to be able to pull something out. You know, he will be able to make use of, you know, there's still a lot of talent there. You know, even a guy like Yabusele, for example, you know, he might only play 9-10 minutes, but it will be 9-10 key matchup minutes. So I've got the Bucks in six. I'm not ruling out Brad Stevens to pull out something a little magical, though.
Yeah, Absolutely. And look, the Bucks are not, but the way Jabari Parker was finishing the season, in just 26 minutes, he was putting up like 30 points. I mean, this kid's a real deal. So if they take his minute restriction off here for the playoffs and just let him roll and he stays healthy, the way Middleton's been playing with Giannis being, you know, a tried and true, like legit superstar, you know, this Bucks team is going to be scary, and I would love, we'll go on to the next, the Sixers and the Heat next, because I would love to see a Bucks-Sixers series after this one. I think that's like the future of the East, just a preview of the future of the East, and the future could be now, and we'll talk about that here in this next series. I'll tell you my opinion of the Sixers, but what do you think about Sixers and the Heat, Craig?
I might go a bit controversial here. I've got the Heat in seven.
That is, yeah, I think a lot of people are on the Sixers bandwagon. I mean, what, they finished 16-0 or something to finish the season, or something
crazy? Yeah, they broke their franchise record, didn't they, for most wins in a row?
Yeah, without Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's the part for me that really showed that this Sixers team is for real. When you lose, because Embiid, it's not like with other teams where we worry about how they're going to play when Embiid comes back. Like with Pelicans losing Cousins, I don't think this is that type of situation where we're like, well, maybe the Pelicans are better without this. Nobody will argue that the Sixers are better without Joel Embiid. They're not. But the fact that they can still win without him shows me that this is a scary team. And the Heat don't really have that superstar player. But Spoelstra has them playing some of the best team ball in basketball. I don't want to discount anything the Heat have done. But talk about two teams headed in different directions at the end of the season, momentum-wise. And I just think the Sixers are just going to have too much momentum right now. They're going to get him. They won't have Embiid the first game, maybe not even the first series, I'm not sure. But just when they get him back, that spark he's going to bring. Now, if the Heat can steal a couple here in the beginning, then I could see it going to seven, like you're predicting. But I'm going to say Sixers in five, because I just think that they got the momentum going. So you want to back up your while you're thinking seven?
Eric Spoelstra, really been there, done it, got the T-shirt. I know it wasn't the fact that the best finishes the season for the Heat. But I think that, you know, you've got a very, very young and experienced team there in Philadelphia. Playoff baseball, that's certainly different from playoff basketball. Playoff basketball is, you know, it's a different animal. And I've got to see it from the Sixers before I really, really believe them to be a force to be able to take, you know, an NBA championship or come close. And I'm going to stick with what I know, stick with Spoelstra, and Heat in seven for me.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I just, and maybe it's just the part of me that is just excited about the future of the NBA and where it's headed. You know, who wants to see the Sixers go? And maybe I'm getting a little impatient, but I mean, I've just been so impressed with this team, and you know, these guys don't play like young guys, and the way that Redick's been playing, and Bellinelli, and you know, I make jokes about Bellinelli being Italian for Redick, but they have really put some pieces together, even with Ilyasova and his ability. Like they've done a masterful job of taking these players that fit their scheme perfectly. The inside out game, the playing around Ben Simmons' inability to shoot outside, but his ability to get to the rim, to open up the middle for him and Embiid with guys who are just knocking down shots left and right with Redick and Bellinelli and Ilyasova and Saric and Covington. I mean, these guys have so many guys who can spread the floor and create that space in the middle for guys like Simmons and Embiid who are elite guys when it comes to getting to the rim. I mean, I don't see... obviously Whiteside is going to be a wild card and a difference maker in his ability to protect the rim. You know, they have some decent defenders with Winslow and James Johnson who are kind of long defenders who can close out and defend the pick and roll. So
you've hit the nail on the head there, though, haven't you? And for me, that's part of the reason is you've got Bam, you've got James Johnson, you've got, you know, Winslow, you've got guys, you know, that have got athleticism that are going to make it difficult in the paint. You know, Simmons isn't going to have it all his own way against the Heat, like he does against softer teams, if you like. Same with Embiid, you know, there's a question mark on his health. But I think the matchup's there, that the Heat can really, really give them a run for their money. And I think they've got the athleticism. You know, it's going to come down to whether the Heat can get enough offense to be able to hurt the Sixers. But I definitely think that the Heat can stop them.
And they, you know, they have guys that can score in bunches.
A lot of health question marks.
Yeah, they have guys who can score in bunches with Johnson and Ellington and Dragic. You know, these guys can score. So, you know,
I don't really put James Johnson down as a
no, I meant Tyler Johnson.
Oh, Tyler Johnson. Sorry. Yeah. I just think that if there's a side in the first round that match up well against the way the Sixers are playing at the moment, I think it's the Heat. You know, well-coached side. They've got athleticism. They're going to be able to stop them in the paint. And, you know, Redick's going to be key. If Embiid can hit some threes, it's, you know, going to be huge for them. But I kind of feel that they're going to have to play over the Heat. And I think that's going to be more difficult than what people think.
Yeah. No, I agree. And whoever said, like, this NBA season was going to be predictable and boring, it's this – the fact that you and I, who watch a lot of basketball, are excited about the Heat Sixers round one, just shows that the parity is there at the top. You know, maybe at the bottom, yeah, maybe the bad teams are really, really bad, but these top 16 teams are really good teams, and we could see a lot of different matchups than what we would have guessed early on. And even the fact that we're even debating whether or not the Sixers and the Heat, you know, are going to move on. And I think both of those teams, if they win this series, have a legit shot of getting to the conference finals. Because I think either one of these teams can beat the Celtics or the Bucks. So, I mean, I don't know, at the beginning of the year, either one of us would have guessed that the Sixers and the Heat could have a chance to make it to the conference finals. But that's what's looking like it's going to happen. So the final series, and always the most fun to talk about, because LeBron James is involved, the Cavaliers and the Pacers. The Pacers look like, you know, getting rid of a guy like Paul George and get better because they get a guy like Victor Oladipo, who somehow the Thunder are looking at it. Again, it's like watching James Harden leave and become one of the best players in basketball. They watch Oladipo leave and become one of the best players in basketball. And I heard an interview with the owner of the Thunder or the Pacers on why they wanted Oladipo, and why they took the trade that a lot of people thought wasn't getting enough for Paul George with what else was out there. And it's because he said Oladipo wants to be the best, and he's there morning through the night practicing and wants to be the best NBA player in the league. And at times this year, he's looked like it. To get the Pacers, who, you know, people would struggle to name one other player on that team other than Miles Turner, who they got to the playoffs despite Miles Turner having one of the worst seasons ever for somebody who was predicted to break out and be their superstar, and still to make the playoffs, really says a lot about what Oladipo has done there and the confidence that he's brought to the team. So that all being said, it's LeBron James. It's the playoffs. He's been to the finals, what, 6 to 8 years in a row or something. I mean, the Cavaliers are going to win. I'll give the Pacers a game. I'll say the Cavaliers win in five. But I think I'm just glad to see Oladipo's finally get a chance on the national stage here to show what he can do. What do you think, Craig?
I've got Cavs in six. I'm giving Pacers a couple of games. I think the Pacers are really going to have to push the tempo on the defensive end, really play tight to have any chance whatsoever. You know, really get in the passing lanes. I don't think they're completely out of it, but when you're playing against LeBron in the playoffs, it's going to be tough. And I might be generous in giving Pacers a couple of games. But they can block shots. They can still, you know, they can be very, very disruptive to opponent's offense when it's going well. I just think that with the intensity it's going to require on the offensive end, on the defensive end in terms of effort, I just don't think they'll have enough in the tank to really be able to do enough damage to take it to a game seven. But I'm going to give them a couple of games, to be generous. I've got Cavs in six.
Yeah, that would be a fun series, and I think the wild card has to be Miles Turner in this one. If he can play like the superstar he looks like he can be, then the Pacers are going to make it really tough on the Cavs. And I could see them getting a couple games, maybe even pushing it to a game seven if Turner and Oladipo are both clicking. That being said, there's really nothing about this regular season that gives me any confidence whatsoever that Miles Turner is going to do anything special. So that's why I settled on Cavs in five. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, that's going to be a fun game. I think that's on today, too. So I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, so we've covered the NBA playoffs. Why don't we just kind of get through the NBA draft and our predictions there. You guys are really lucky to be listening right now with us having Craig here on the podcast, as always, because he is our college European guru to help us here with the draft. And, his analysis of these players is typically spot on. So let's start by taking a look at the potential order here. Maybe we'll start with the top three. The teams with the most potential of getting a top three pick, and that's actually barely. So maybe we'll do top four, because the Hawks and the Mavericks are just 0.2% apart here as far as getting a top three pick. The Phoenix Suns have a 25% chance at the number one pick and a 64% chance of being in the top three. The Grizzlies have a 19.9% chance of the number one pick and a 55.8% chance of being in the top three. And then Dallas and Atlanta basically have the same odds of being the number one pick at 12.8 and 12.9, and the odds of the top three at 40 and 39.8. So, Craig, the top four here, let's just say all the balls bounce in the right way, and the Suns get the number one pick. Who would you take if you were the Phoenix Suns? And then who do you think the Suns will actually take?
I think the Suns should take Luka Doncic, and I think that they actually will take Luka Doncic. Okay. I know you've got a different theory on this.
You sound kind of echoey, too, on your mic there, just as a heads up.
Okay, you go through your pick.
Sure.
Go through your pick.
Okay, well, I don't necessarily know. I know before the season started, everyone was talking about Bagley and Porter. And then some people had heard about this Luka Doncic kid from Europe. I've watched tape of Doncic now after hearing Craig's glowing reviews and seeing all this stuff on him. And this guy looks like the real deal. I mean, you don't want to miss out on the next, like, Kristaps Porzingis and even more skilled and not take Luka Doncic. I mean, he just looks like a sure thing here, where Bagley and Porter struggled at times, look young. They'll probably be really good pros. The wild card here, and this guy's come out of nowhere. I read an article about him coming out of the Bahamas, and this kid and his struggles, and also he made a lot of news with his coach, talking about paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for him. But DeAndre Ayton seems to be the guy that a lot of experts are looking at the number one pick, and the fact that he's just right down the road, about an hour and a half away, playing in Tucson, Arizona, from where Phoenix plays. I don't know if that'll play any part in it. I really hope it doesn't, because that'd be the dumbest way to draft ever. But Ayton does have those skills. I mean, all four of these big guys have those the height and the wingspan and the 3-point ability and that unicorn, Joel Embiid type of potential, I think. Doncic does appear to me to be the one that is the most sure thing of the four of them, I think. Just, I don't know what it is, but I watch him play and he seems to be the most confident of them, where the other ones are very hit and miss. So if I were the Suns, I would take Doncic. But I would not be surprised at all, since they are the Phoenix Suns and they don't have the best track record, of them, going for Ayton and hopefully Aiden not becoming the next kind of Greg Oden type player. But what about number two? Does Aiden even make your top two, Craig?
Well, just going back to the Suns for a minute, the reason I've got Doncic over Aiton is I think that as a physical specimen, Aiton's the number one guy in the draft.
Oh, sorry, the mic cut out a little there, Craig. So I'll just jump in. I think what Craig was referring to when he said I had a different theory was we were talking before the podcast, and I think the Suns, you know, they have Alex Len, they have Chandler, you know, and but I think the piece that might be missing here, now that they have what Josh Jackson looks like the real deal at wing, you know, they have these pieces, even Ulis, you know, for the most part, looks like a decent point guard. You know, they have all these, what they seem to be lacking is a real athletic center. I mean, they have Len, who's the kind of classic, you know, lumbering kind of center. You know, they have Chandler in there, who, you know, is just kind of getting older. You know, Ayton gives them that legit center who, you know, the Joel Embiid type potential to mix in there with those other pieces that they kind of already have in place. But sorry, you were talking about, yeah.
The problem that I have there that I was going to go into is that, you know, I think that Phoenix isn't a very good fit. I don't think the personnel's right for DeAndre Ayton. There's some real naivety in his defensive game. And I think we've seen that, you know, a similar situation with Chris, who's got all that athletic ability, but it's not panned out. I think Ayton needs the right coaching staff around him. I think he needs a more experienced personnel around him. And I don't think it's the right fit for Phoenix. Phoenix, I think they need a guy that's able to control the floor. Someone who has played as a pro like Luka Doncic is going to be a huge advantage. A guy that, you know, if we're talking about deficiencies, Doncic, that both players have deficiencies. Doncic is not very athletic. Not only is he not athletic, you know, he's not the quickest, but he's a real wizard and master on the ball. And I'm not just talking about his ability to pass the ball, but his basketball IQ is off.
Is like a Nikola Jokic kind of a fair comparison with Doncic, not being super athletic but having really good passing skills and an outside game
Doncic will have the ability to play anywhere from the one to the three. You know, Nikola Jokic is a completely different position entirely.
Yeah. How tall is Doncic?
6'6", I think.
Okay, so he's more of a wing guy.
6'6", 6'7". But you see him play for Real Madrid, and you know, he does rotate amongst the positions. But he's not an explosive player. We're not talking about a highly athletic, you know, a guard which is going to be necessarily do it all. We're talking about a high basketball IQ player, and I think that's exactly what Phoenix need, especially as we don't know who the, you know, whether it's going to be. David Fitzdale as the coach, or whether it's going to be, you know, the Atlanta guy, Mike Budenholzer, or whatever his name is. I really think they need a high basketball IQ player around those very young players. Not worry so much about positional need and get the foundations right in terms of personnel and who's going to get the best out of everybody. And I don't think DeAndre Ayton's that guy. I think Ayton's a little bit more immature, a little bit naive in the way that he plays. Really has some struggles occasionally on the defensive end, but he's got all the physical tools. And I think that Phoenix need more than physical tools at this point. I think they need high basketball IQ. I think Doncic has proved that he's a special talent. You know, he's done what no European has ever done as an 18-year-old before. And yes, he slowed down at the back end of the season, but he's an 18-year-old, you know, playing professional basketball, you know, week in, week out. It's a different kettle of fish. So I've got Luka Doncic at number one.
Yep, I could get behind that, and all those points about the Suns are definitely true. As someone who went to multiple Suns games this year, the one thing they don't need is another immature player. And they have a lot of size, so they don't necessarily need Ayton size. When you have a Bender and a Chris and a Len, having like a Jackson and a Doncic out there with Booker, because I could see Booker even running a little bit of point guard too. You know, having those three guys on the floor with Chris and Len, or Bender and Len. I mean, you're talking about, Doncic like a Ben Simmons type, even. Yeah.
You can't underestimate Doncic's ability to run the offense play the point guard position either. And he's going to create a lot of flexibility for any team that takes him from the 1-3 positions on the offensive end.
Yeah, I mean, you could see a little bit of the Sixers kind of setup with Booker, you know, being an outside shooter and Doncic kind of filling the Ben Simmons role. Yeah, right. And Bender's ability to spread the floor, and Chris can shoot the three too. Yeah, I mean, I'm getting excited just thinking about the different. So I can imagine a coach like Fizdale or somebody like that would be really excited to have a player like that involved in the offense. So number two, it looks like Memphis will probably be a top three pick for sure. Is DeAndre Ayton a fit in Memphis, or would you go somewhere else?
I've got Jaren Jackson Jr. as my fit for Memphis. Reason being is that I kind of feel that they need a guy that is, you know, Marc Gasol's probably on his way out. If not now, then very soon. They've got Deonta Davis, who I think is a very exciting young player, who I think is going to really explode at some point and is going to be, you know, one of those really hot waiver wire pickup guys that everyone will say they were always in on, as they always do. But I think Jaren Jackson Jr. will fit into that side really well.
What about, they have the Ivan Rabb and Jarrell Martin and some other decent size guys there too?
Limited upside though. With Jaren Jackson Jr., what you're talking about is you're talking about probably the best natural rim protector in this draft. Possibly outside of Mitchell Robinson, but he's definitely up there. You know, this guy blocks shots for fun. You know, weak side, strong side, both hands. His natural shot blocking ability is phenomenal. You know, the timing, use of both hands, it really is a phenomenal sight to see. It gets him into foul trouble, which you expect from a freshman. And it's going to take a bit of time for Jaren Jackson to really hit his peak. This isn't a guy I think that, you know, you're necessarily going to be wanting to target early in redraft leagues, but it's the guy you want to be really aggressive on in Dynasty. Yeah. But I just think the fit in Memphis is good. I think that, you know, he has the ability to stretch the floor, and that's ever improving. You know, he's a legitimate stretch four player who can protect the rim. He also is an excellent passer on the ball, really, really underrated passer. And in terms of upside, there might not be in this draft a player with a higher fantasy upside ceiling than Jaren Jackson Jr.
Is this draft deeper than last year's? Because I'm looking, I see Jackson falling as far as, you know, 8 or 9 in some boards, and you have him as high as 2. I mean, that signals to me this draft is deep. If a guy, you know, if there's potentially some people consider 7 or 8 guys better than this guy who you figure as the number 2 pick, that must be a deep draft.
Well, the thing is with this draft, and a bit like last year's draft, is there are, you know, you look at the top 15, 16 guys, and there is a lot of talent. But every single one of these players, much like last year, they have a question mark, you know. Where last year we were talking about Lonzo Ball and Fultz. Did Lonzo Ball have the athleticism, you know, poor free throw shooter.
His shot, yeah.
And his shot issues. Markel Fultz, very explosive. But, you know, his free throw shooting had a lot to be desired. De'Aaron Fox's shot form wasn't great coming into the draft. You know, Jonathan Isaac was raw. Larry Markkinen, could he play D? And could he be more than just a three? You know, they all had their question marks. But it's exactly the same here. I think that this draft has got a little bit more talent in it in terms of fantasy ceiling. But they all have their question marks. But I just think, you know, Eaton might be the guy for number two. He might be the second best player in the draft. But in terms of actual fit, I think that Memphis would be better off with Jaren Jackson Jr. for me than DeAndre Eaton.
Cool. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so happy it went from just being the Bagley and Porter show to all these other guys really stepping up. So number three, it looks like it's going to be a toss-up between Dallas and Atlanta. Let's just say Dallas grabs the number three pick, since they have a 0.1% chance better of getting it. Who would you go for if you're Mark Cuban and your epic tank job was successful, and now you have a shot on your draft board at someone like Ayton or Bagley or Porter or Bamba or Carter? Who do you go with?
I go for Michael for Dallas.
Yes, for Dallas.
I've got Michael Porter Jr. I know that's aggressive for a guy that was, you know, hurt after playing a few minutes at the start of the season. If I'm Dallas, I want to get this right. I want to get the best player, and I don't want to rush it. You know, if it means that Porter Jr. sits for half a season, or you edge him in really, really slowly, if you're going to tank and you're Dallas, let's do it right. And I think that Porter Jr. is, you know, probably the biggest wild card in the top eight guys here because of obviously the lost season, but he could well end up being the best player as well. You know, the upside is real.
What?
You know, this was the guy that they were talking about as potentially the clear number one pick going, you know, favourite going into the season. Yes, it's been a lost season, but Dallas needs a big man. Again, I'm not sure Eaton's, Eaton would be great in Dallas as well, you know, whether it's Eaton or Porter Jr. But I've got Dallas with Porter Jr. I think they've just got to get it right. Ideally, I think Jaron Jackson Jr. would be the best guy for Dallas, but I've got him going to Memphis, so I'm going to stick with Porter Jr.
Yeah, I think whoever ends up with Porter is going to get a steal and really get really lucky that he had an injury and they didn't happen to have the number one pick and he fell to them, whoever he ends up with. And definitely he'll be top five for sure. What I like about this kid is that even with the injury, he wanted to get back for the NCAA tournament. He wanted to play. He wanted to be competitive, even if it could hurt him further. And that's what I like to see in a player is just that heart. And so to have a guy that has his natural gifts plus that competitiveness, to me that puts him up and above everybody else. When you have that combination of those two things, that's why guys like LeBron James and Michael Jordan and those guys got to the level that they got to. They had the physical gifts, yes, but there's a lot of guys who had similar physical gifts to those guys who didn't get to that level, and it's because they lacked that competitiveness and that fire. And I think that Porter might have that. And I'd be really excited to get Porter on a team that I was rooting for sure.
I mean, obviously the injury is a real concern, but you've got an opportunity to have a real special two-way player. You know, a real focal point of the offense as well. And I think Dallas are crying out for that. I think they've lost quite a bit of identity these days, you know, with the decline of Dirk. DSJ is, he's going to get there and he's going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt in my mind. And I think that if you're looking for a perfect complement to that, and this is why I go Porter Jr. for Dallas over Eaton, is that I think that Porter Jr. is able to stretch the floor better than Eaton. I don't rate Eaton's three-point shot at the next level. And I think that a Porter Jr. DSJ potential partnership a couple of seasons down the line has got the chance to be really special. So definitely Porter Jr. For Dallas for me.
Yeah, and Porter seems like the type of guy that Mark Cuban really loves. The guy who just wants to play basketball, wants to get better. That's why he loved Dirk. That's why he kept Dirk there. He's one of the few players that stayed with his same team forever. If he has that same kind of fire and that same kind of skill, you know, I think that's just the type of guy Cuban. So I like that pick. I agree there. So number four to Atlanta. Atlanta just can never seem to get anywhere. You know, it seems like Atlanta's been rebuilding for the last 20 years. Is this the draft? They find the guy to match with Taurean Prince and John Collins and get something done?
I've finally got DeAndre Ayton going here to Atlanta.
Yeah.
I think to potentially have a front court of Collins and Ayton really gives you that foundation, a real identity of being, you know, tough down low. Lots of athleticism. I like that partnership as well.
And along with Schrader and then Prince up in the backcourt. I mean, that's a wicked front four right there, top four right there.
Well, Taurean Prince is more of a 3-and-D guy for me. I think some of the expectations on him, you know, and this is coming from a Baylor fan. You know, I watched a lot of Prince a couple of seasons ago. I think some of the expectations are too high on him, but that Eaton Collins potential front court partnership, I think, is definitely something that you can sort of build around and look to the future and play player system out of. So yeah, Eaton a four for me. I don't necessarily think it's necessarily the best fit in terms of Eaton's development, being around the young players. Ideally, I'd love to see Eaton in a place like Boston or somewhere where he can really learn from the best, mentor off of Al Horford, etc. But given the draft order, I've got Eaton going to Atlanta.
All right, so let's go 5 through 10 here. We'll speed it up a little bit just because we've been going here, for over an hour. Let's go Orlando, Chicago, the next two picks. Who do you have going there?
Okay, Orlando, I've got Trae Young. Everybody seems really concerned with Trae Young and the decline of Oklahoma and the decline in his form toward, efficiency towards the back end of the season. Look, the guy was an 18-year-old freshman playing heavy minutes with a 40 usage rate whilst being double or triple teamed.
Yeah.
Of course the guy was going to break down. It's an 18-year-old kid.
He reminded me a lot of Curry when he was at Davidson. And then Curry ended up dropping, and look what happened with him.
for anyone who hasn't read the article that I wrote on Trae Young, you'll see how high I am, and it will go into it in a lot more depth. But the kid's a special talent, and the fact that he's such a threat from anywhere in the opponent's half, it creates so much space. I've talked about it before, but it creates so much space in the offense in the paint. And Trae Young is an underrated passer of the basketball. There are so many ways at the NBA level that he can hurt a team on the offense. Yes, he's not the best defender in the world, but no one's going to draft him to be a lockdown defender. But this could be a real, real big fantasy asset down the line in dynasty leagues, because the way he can hurt teams with a 3-point shot, the way he can, he's like a microwave, can just get hot at any time. And his ability to pass the ball. You don't sleep on Trae Young just because he tailed off at the end of the season, as did Oklahoma. That was always going to happen with that 40 usage rate and the heavy minutes on a freshman. Well, so I've got Trae Young
five. And Orlando. Well, Orlando really needs a point guard. I mean, they're alternating Shelvin Mack and DJ Augustine. You put him on the floor with Evan Fournier and the second best Nikola Vucevic. And Aaron Gordon, and you're looking at a really solid starting, scary starting five, like a high scoring starting five there. And talk about exciting too. Orlando needs excitement. That those fans are probably not too happy with what's been going on. They fired their coach. I think bringing an exciting player like Trae Young to pair with those other pieces is would be a really good move.
Yeah. Sacramento, I've got...
Or Chicago, Chicago, sorry.
Okay, Chicago, I've got Miles Bridges. Probably a reach for some people. But I think that Miles Bridges is going to complement that team really well. Is he going to be a small forward? Is he going to be a power forward at the next level? Wait to see. But I think that the fit's really good.
Are Miles and McCall Bridges related?
Not that I know of.
Curious.
But Miles Bridges... He had an opportunity of being a legit lottery pick last year, maybe even potential top 10 pick. I had him inside my top 10 last year before he declared that he was going to go back to Michigan State. I'm a really, really big fan. And I think some of the question marks about is he positionless at the next level, I think are a little bit overrated, especially in this day and age positionless basketball. I really like the fit, and it's probably way too high for some people. And the fact that I like the fit in Chicago. I think that he could do wonderful things there. I really do.
I like him as sort of maybe even an Andre Iguodala type, as a ceiling, probably. But I agree
disagree with that. That might be a little bit ambitious of the type.
As a ceiling, yeah.
But I think that he's ready to go, and I think that he's ready to go. I think I think there is good upside there. I think that he could contribute well in Chicago next year, and I think next year is a really big year for Chicago, identity wise. They've got the pieces in. They've got the pieces which are showing flashes. I think Miles Bridges can go in, fit into that culture. you know, 2 years of college under his belt, you know, 2 years of high level college basketball under his belt, and I think that that will go well.
Yeah, my aggressive predictions for next season were Zach LaVine potentially being an all-star, and I put up, I think Nicholas Batum was the other guy I liked to take that step, but putting him Bridges in there with LaVine and Chris Dunn, and well, Markkanen looked awesome. Put another athletic guy in there with those guys, and you're looking at a really scary team.
Yeah, potentially down the line. There's still a long way to go, but I like the fit. Sacramento, I've got Marvin Bagley eventually going. I know people have got him up as high as two, potentially one.
Yeah.
I really have some serious question marks about Bagley's ability to defend at the next level. And actually, same with quite a lot of those Duke guys. You know, they did show a lot of naivety on the defensive end a lot of the time.
Which is rare for a Duke player. They used to be the opposite. You know, they would come out really, it goes
through phases, though, doesn't it? And every team's different. Every team brings its own culture, regardless of whether the coach is the same or different. But I think Sacramento, you know, it'll be kind of the beginning of the end of Scala Bissier, if you like. I think that Bagley has got that ability to really take on the you know, the offensive workload that team really, really needs. It'll bring the best out of De'Aaron Fox.
How about next to Cauley Stein?
Potentially, yeah. You know, you can't underestimate Willie Cauley Stein as an actual real-life basketball player, because his ability to be able to defend, you know, guys that are much, much smaller than him, you know, twos and threes. You know, Willie Cauley Stein is a terrific basketball player, whether he's streaky in fantasy or not. But I think that what they really crying out for, and I think that what they really wanted out of Buddy Hield, was a guy that could take the offense on. It was never going to happen. You know, Buddy Hield, 4-year college senior with an outlier year, no athleticism, was never going to happen. But I think Bagley's the kind of guy that Sacramento can fall in love with. Lovely, smooth offensive game. And I think it would really give the fans something to cheer about as well. They got Harry Giles. Let's not forget Harry Giles, who himself was a college phenom as well.
Oh, yeah.
It allow them to, to sort of fluctuate the two and bring them both along sort of kind of together and see how that works. But, yeah, I got Bagley going to Sacramento.
Oh, I think Sacramento would be absolutely thrilled to see Bagley fall to number 7.
I agree.
I mean, how could you not? Okay, and then Cleveland would be the number 8 potential pick.
Mo Bamba.
All right. I've seen him as high as 5 in a lot of things, so... So what you like Mo Bamba? I saw you did an article on Mo Bamba. So if anyone wants a lot of more information on that,
I wouldn't say I love Mo Bamba. Again, he has his deficiencies. But if you're Cleveland, it's your next level shot stopper, isn't it? I mean, was it 7'9" wingspan? You see the guy. See the guy get when he gets his arms up. It's ridiculous. Ante Zizic, I'm a big, big fan, but he's not an athletic rim protector as such. He's more of your typical European, you know, Enes Kanter boards and points kind of guy. You know, he can block his shots. He's very good in transition. But I think Bamba's the fit there. And, you know, I look at the teams above. The only one I could really see taking Bamba is Dallas. You know, if Dallas don't take Bamba, I think he potentially falls to Cleveland.
Let me ask you this, Craig. Does LeBron leaving affect Cleveland's pick? Who they take?
I think at that stage, if it comes down to pick 8, I think potentially not.
Let's say Trae Young is there, or Miles Bridges is still available.
I think Mo Bamba's still the pick for Cleveland. I think that they go that route if still available at 8. The fit's too good. The fit's too good.
How about the New York Knicks? I'm looking at a mock draft where someone has the Knicks taking Trae Young. How many point guards do we need to have in New York you know.
Well, I've got another point guard that I've got going to the Knicks, and I've got Colin Sexton.
Really?
Yeah. The theory behind
he's
this
awesome.
Is...
Yeah, I like Sexton a lot. I think he's a really underrated and didn't get a lot of attention because being in Alabama, but I like that kid.
I disagree. I think going into the college season, he was one of the most helium guys, if you like. He had the massive McDonald's game where he won the dunk contest, the three-point contest. The reason I like this move for the Knicks is that let's forget about Moutier and let's forget about
Burke.
Trey Burke for a minute here. I don't really see those as pinnacle parts of the Knicks' future.
No.
I want to focus on a potential partnership in the backcourt of Colin Sexton and Frank Ntilikina. Sexton can absolutely be the yin to Ntilikina's yang. With Ntilikina, you've got a guard with size, nice lengthy arms, excellent defense, disrupts the points lane, you know, good pass with the ball, still learning the game himself. But Colin Sexton does everything well that Ntilikina doesn't. You know, he's a dynamic, athletic, explosive scorer. You know, he doesn't have the size of Ntilikina, so there's potential for Ntilikina to play combo guard and Sexton play the point. I think the yin and the yang there will work really, really well. And I think that you know, New York's been crying for a point guard that had to have some real explosiveness and some real athleticism. I think Sexton's that guy.
Yeah.
I think the fit, again, I think it's just too good. So, you know, another guy, I know that there's, I know the Knicks are quite high, Mikal Bridges, and, you know, fantastic playoff series that he had. But again, I think that, you know, given the fact you got Ntilikina there already, I think that Sexton is the much better fit.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm so high on Sexton is probably the reason why you're not just thinking, you know, these outlier things kind of inflating his stock. But for me, when it comes to the draft, I love a guy that's sort of a high impact player. When a guy can come in and really affect the game, and I think Sexton is one of those guys. Like Trae Young is one of those guys. You know, Ayton is kind of one of those guys, you know, where they can come in and immediately affect the game. And I think Sexton has the ability to be sort of maybe Donovan Mitchell-ish, you know, coming in and being able to be a high scorer right away in the NBA. And really in the day and age of spreading the floor and high speed basketball. So I like him a lot.
In the sense that Sexton, I think, you've got to be realistic in the fact that Sexton's a 6'2" guard who is a freshman. It's going to take time. I, for me, can't see that transition being as fluid as you, just because he's going to have to learn to take. Who I'd almost compare it to a bit is Malik Monk. Monk started the season, and you know, anyone that listens to me will know that I would have said, you know, this is a guy with huge amount of talent. Do not give up on this player. Do not give up on this player. Because Malik Monk is undersized, not very physically strong. But once he learns to make contact or take contact, he's going to be a phenomenal player. And we've seen the back end of the season, you know, that little bit of experience through the season, learning the physicalities of the NBA game. You know, he really put up some big games.
Him in and
24 minutes.
Malik Monk, Marshawn Brooks and Quinn Cook won me my money basketball league because I had injuries to Butler, to Harris, to Embiid, to Devin Booker, and I was able to grab those three guys off the waiver wire. Malik Monk saved my butt, like with his play at the end of the year.
Player. You know, he was playing. He was almost the heartbeat, if you like, of the Kentucky team with Bam Adebayo and De'Aaron Fox.
Oh yeah.
But again, if you watch Monk play in college, you knew that it was going to take a bit of time because you knew that he wasn't going to come into the NBA. He didn't have the muscle. He didn't have the ability to take the contact. You know, he had all the skills, and you know, he has the ability to play point guard as well. But because of De'Aaron Fox and Isaiah Briscoe, he didn't necessarily have the opportunity at Kentucky to do that. But it's a fantastic player. But again, like I said, a bit like DeRozan when he started, just needed to learn to take contact, have that confidence in himself to drive the lane and take it. And I think it's going to be the case with Sexton. You know, Sexton's got the athleticism, as has Monk, and he's going to be a very, very good NBA player. There's a lot of skills, I think, which are going to translate very, very well to the NBA. But the issue that I've got in terms of an immediate impact, 6'2". I think it's going to take time. You know, you've got to remember, Donovan Mitchell came into the season. He wasn't a freshman. You know, he had had more college experience under his belt. You know, Sexton is, you know, 6'2" freshman. So I give it a bit of time. But I think that's the right pick for me from New York. I'm going to take the, you know, I want an explosive athlete in my backcourt to complement Anil Akina.
And so finally, and this is very relevant, will be the 76ers are could be picking 10th. Who do you think? Okay, is this where Mikal Bridges goes? Is this where Wendell Carter goes? I mean, yeah, so far.
Well, this is a pick that could go a lot of different ways, but I've got Mikal Bridges here, and I thought long and hard about this. As you know, I haven't put Wendell Carter in my top 10. You know, he would be on talent, but in terms of how this draft order pans out and fit, I haven't necessarily got him there. Possibly to Chicago instead of Miles Bridges, but I've got Mikal Bridges here. I think that having the swing man and the skill set that he has, you know, those long lengthy arms, I think that he could really be an asset immediately, if you like.
Is he a little redundant with Saric and Covington?
I don't think so at all. You got. At this point, what is it you're primarily going to be looking to do? For me, it's going to be trying to improve, or not improve because it's decent already, but improve the defensive element on the wings. And I think Mikal Bridges is going to complement that perfectly. And with Bridges and Covington, you've potentially given yourselves a couple of wings who are able to play lockdown D in playoffs. Mikal Bridges is also probably a lot more NBA ready than any of the other guards that we've talked about. You know, Redick's not really a defensive player. I mean, he's on a one-year deal.
Yeah, he may not be back. Yeah.
So again, you've got there's minutes to be had immediately. But I think that you know the long lengthy arms, you know the ability to defend on the wing. I think that it's a golden pick for them. You know, I don't necessarily think it's the most exciting player in the draft, but the guy's a winner. And, you know, if you're the 76ers, you want some experience, some college experience, and yeah. You want a winner.
Well, you're past the rebuilding point at this point now. There's no more process. Now it's let's win. We got the guys. No. Let's do it now. So they want to bring in a guy. They don't want another project, I don't think.
No. I mean, there are other guys, you know. Do they potentially go Wendell Carter? You know, a bit of insurance, if you like, for Embiid, banking on the fact that maybe he's only going to play 60 games a season or even less. I just can't see them taking a guy like Kevin Knox or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Lonnie Walker, who have got, you know, a lot of upside there and a lot of excellent points to their game. But it's going to take time. You know, they still own the rights to guys like Jonah Bolden, for example. You know, that they've got stashes, they've had their stashes. I think now's the time to bring in a guy that can contribute. You know, you're a playoff team now. They're a team that needs someone who can contribute to a top 10 level, if you like, to the needs that they have. You know, and you'd be drafting to need, you'd be drafting quality, and you'd be getting, you know, a guy with a couple of years college experience, you know, well, 3 years college experience behind him. Coming into the draft and a national championship, so so that's my top 10.
I can't argue with all the picks that you laid out there. I think the most for sure pick is Philadelphia getting Mikal Bridges at around 10. I think that's probably the best fit, the most sure thing in the draft. Orlando.
Trey Young to Orlando, I think for me is probably the most sure thing.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, I would love to see him on Orlando. I think it's a perfect, if it fits need, I think it gives a team that had a really letdown this season, who fired a coach, it gives them a lot of an exciting player that the fans can really get behind through the summer. So I love that. I've seen Trae Young falling as low as 9 or 10 in a lot of drafts. So just for him and for Orlando, I think that would be a really solid landing spot for him.
But when you're projecting these drafts or you're seeing, you know, other people's draft boards, etc., you got to take it all with a pinch of salt. You know, are people literally ranking their top 10 players, or are they putting, players in for you know, fits into certain teams. There's different ways that, you know, different ways that you can look at it. If I was ranking my top 10 in terms of actual how I can see future NBA impact or fantasy impact, it would be different. But I think it's trying to find the right guy for the right team. You know, Trae Young for me as a fantasy fantasy asset in terms of this draft is potentially a top 3 or 4 guy, but he will fall to wherever Orlando picks. You know, I'm quite certain of that. You know, if Orlando end up picking 8, he'll go 4. I think it's as simple as that. So I think you've got to take it all with a pinch of salt. You know,
yeah.
And yeah, we're always going to get it wrong as well. You know, anybody who said that they're always going to get it right, always get it right. You know, they're liars.
Oh, yeah.
These are human beings. They've got to adapt to becoming professionals. There's still a lot of projectability to their game. And of all the guys that we talked about there, you know, we're talking about 8 freshmen there out of the top 10. I think the only exceptions off the top of my head were Mikal Bridges and Miles Bridges. I think everybody else is a freshman or, you know, Luka Doncic, who's, you know, freshman.
Yeah.
There's a lot of projectability still to come, and trying to necessarily project, we don't always get it right, but we use the tools that we got. You know, we use our eyes and, you know, the experience and stuff that we know to try and project how it pans out. And the landings, you know, I could turn around here and say, I don't know, let's just say Mo Bamba's going to be a fantastic fantasy player, but where he lands up is going to be huge. It's the same with any of these guys. You know, a poor landing spot can really, really hurt players. It really can. But at the same time, I'd always take talent over opportunity and just be patient. But then I only really play in Dynasty League. That's my top 10, Brent.
Thank you, Craig. As always, amazing insight that I don't think many people can get from a lot of other podcasts. So I hope people listening to this spread the word about what we have going on here at Razzball. We're going to bring in these podcasts all through the off season too, because we just love talking basketball, whether it's actually on or not. And what's shaping up to be a really exciting NBA playoffs is going to be followed by what's looking like a really exciting draft. And then we get to see what's going to be a really exciting off-season of trades and, who knows, LeBron to L.A. and George to L.A. or the Banana Boat crew. I mean, who knows what's going to happen in this off-season. So we're going to have lots to talk about. It's going to be fun. The NBA, and I'm writing an article on this right now. It's going to be out pretty soon. But on why I think the NBA could overtake soccer as the world's biggest sport. It's probably a long shot, but I have some compelling arguments, so we'll see. I love the NBA. I think that it's geared perfectly for this environment of social media and seeing the players and their interactions and their personalities, and I think that Adam Silver's leading it in the right direction and making the right moves, and I'm excited to see what they do with the playoff structure. I don't know. I think there's a lot of cool things going on with the NBA, and we're going to be here as many times as we can, breaking it down on these podcasts, doing it in articles on Razzball. So check us out. Thank you, Craig. How can people find you on Twitter?
Usual spot, Storytelling41, or at Storytelling41 for usual stuff. Been a bit redundant the last 6 weeks, battery and a few other issues, but the usual spot.
That's all right. Storytelling 41 for Craig. Once again, I'm Brent, and that's at the Fantasy Dick on Twitter. I'll be doing playoff tweets, predictions, jokes, whatever. Craig will have a ton of insights throughout the NBA playoffs leading up to the draft. There's going to be a lot of movement, I'm sure, on draft boards and trades and things, so that's going to be exciting. So thank you again for joining us. Download it. Tell your friends. Comment below. Let us know topics you'd like us to cover. And I'm gonna stop the recording now, so everyone have a good day.